The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Today, I've been asked to talk about habits of mind. I feel like I'm always talking about habits of mind. It's become a habit to talk about habits of mind. But it's a really important aspect of training, so I think it doesn't hurt to talk about it again. We all have habits of mind. Just things or patterns that we habitually kind of come back to when we're, you know, when we're not thinking about something else, we tend to come back to our habitual patterns of thinking or just something that we're stewing on, you know. We all have our own particular habits of mind, what's sometimes called habit energy, our own default, as it were, accumulated over lifetimes because we have had many lives of thinking in certain ways and or responding in certain ways, getting ourselves into certain kinds of situations. And this is part of our karmic inheritance, that we just have these habitual ways of responding to things that we, here we are, here it is. And when we meditate and practice mindfulness, part of what we're doing is trying to see these habits of mind that that we tend to fall into. And then when we recognize them, we can work on them. When we don't recognize them, we're just dragged around by them. Oh, this thing's making me angry. Oh, this thing is so awful. And we don't realize that actually we're making a choice there. We choose to get upset, or we choose to feel like a victim, or whatever it might be. All kinds of different things. We all have our own flavor. Anger, impatience, you know, can be our habitual response to many situations. Greed and envy. Somebody else has something I don't have, and it's not fair. You know, another habitual response many of us have. Fear and worry, you know, about everything or nothing. Worrying about two opposing things at the same time. Or just general, you know, fear, worry, angst. Guilt, blaming ourselves for everything. It must be my fault, or I haven't been a good person, or I didn't do such and such. Just taking responsibility for the awfulness of everything. You know, it must be my fault. Dwelling on our past mistakes or our missed opportunities. If only I'd done such and such. If only I hadn't made that mistake, my life would be completely different. I wouldn't be in this horrible mess I am now. Everything would have been fine. Or things that have happened to us in the past that have hurt us. This awful thing happened to me, and I can't get over it. We all have our own recipe, you know. Sometimes it come up in an immediate situation. Something happens, and immediately we get angry, we get afraid, or judgmental, critical, or whatever it might be. And often they come up when things are quiet. Here we are trying to meditate, and then our mind is filled with resentment or worry or just dwelling on things that have happened. Or lying awake at night. That's when we see the things that most have, you know, that most beset us. That's when we have our worries arise, our deep fears arise, our resentments come up, and we stew on them, and then we, you know, just chew and chew on them for a long time. And that night, lying awake at night, is a perfect opportunity to see these habits of mind, because they have a field day often at night, as it were. Worrying about something we did. And then we suddenly realize, I've been awake for a long time, worrying about this little thing. What am I doing? You know, and if we can just recognize that and not continue it, with any luck, we might go back to sleep. Or at least relinquish. Or at least be aware of what we're doing. At least to be aware, I am lying here worrying about this little thing or getting upset about this little thing or whatever it might be. And just to see what we're doing and having recognized it, we can do something. The hook. I've talked about the hook. The mind looking for something to latch onto, roaming around, looking for something to get upset about. Ah, look what that person's doing. You know, I knew there was something, you know, I could get upset about. And not even realizing that actually we're doing that, but thinking, well, of course I'm annoyed by this. Look what they're doing, you know. And in fact, the mind has been roaming around looking for trouble or looking for something to worry about or whatever it might be. The hook. We look for our own familiar form of suffering. It sounds funny, but actually we look for the thing that hurts us. It's a strange thing about karma that we look for our own particular thing. If I'm a habitually irritable person, I look for things that annoy me. You know, it would be much nicer if I didn't and I could just live in equanimity, which is what I'd really like to do. However, if we have a critical mind, our little mind looks, you know, or whatever it might be. Recently, we were talking about the ox, the self, out looking for grass, you know. And our job is to train this ox, train the self. We recognize him. First, we recognize him. See his footprints. Irritation. Or just seeing what we're doing. We see the ox. We see the self. Ah, here I am, getting upset, getting angry, wanting something, you know, grasping at something, or whatever it might be. And then we have to train this beast to not be straying over into this sweet grass of its own particular flavor. The mind strays off into the sweet grass. It seems like sweet grass of its own particular form of suffering. If I'm a habitually irritable person, sweet grass is something to get annoyed about. Or, you know, if I'm a fearful person, sweet grass is something to get afraid about. It seems odd. You would think it would be just the other way. But in fact, we look for the exact thing that feeds that form of suffering, exactly like that. It's a funny thing about how this works. Looking for our own sweet grass. There's a certain, like the angry critical mind, there's a certain kind of immediate satisfaction in finding something to justify our anger. Well, of course I'm angry. Look what they did, you know. And there can be an immediate sense of righteousness. That's the sweet grass. But then it turns bitter because actually we don't want to be that way. We don't want to be an angry, critical person. We actually would much rather not. We'd like to restrain our ox from wandering into that particular grass. Or if we have the sense of unworthiness, finding something that seems to confirm it. Yes, I knew they didn't like me. That proves it. Or jealousy. I knew there was something, you know, going on here. And there's a certain immediate satisfaction in finding it seeming to be justified. But actually, the sweetness is not real sweetness. It's bitter because we really don't want to be finding reasons for jealousy or anger or fear or unworthiness or whatever it might be. It just feels that that has the immediate kind of satisfaction of the hook. But actually, it's not what we want. The story, you know. I'm a person who has been terribly hurt or terribly misunderstood or life has been really unfair to me. I've never had a fair shake. Or full of tragedy, you know. We identify with our grief or the hard things that have happened to us or our own feeling about our story. I'm somebody like this. We feel we can't move on. Something about it seems to comfort us. There's a sort of sweetness of familiarity about the story. I am somebody like this. And that's how it is. So I don't have to move on because I am a person who has been struck by grief or sorrow or hardship or whatever it might be. And in fact, if you can see that and begin to relinquish that story, we can move on. Yes, this has happened, and I still have to live my life. Absorb it, accept what's happened, and not make it a limiting thing. I'm just this person who has this. But actually, I have had this happen, and I can accept it, learn from it, and move on. Otherwise, it's just a chain, that story, or our view of ourself, or our particular flavor. Our little ox stuck in this seeming sweet grass can't move on. We all have our own particular sweet grass. Habit energy, the habits of mind that we have and that we have unconsciously cultivated for a long time. We can change this, but it doesn't happen overnight because of that weight of energy, weight of habit. You don't turn around the Queen Mary overnight. It takes a little while to move. Even when someone has an experience of truth, it doesn't immediately evaporate. We still have to deal with our habit energy, our habits of mind. They may seem to disappear for a while. They may be actually greatly weakened, but they still come back. We still have to work with them. If we've had habits of, despair or grief or anger or whatever, they still return. We still have to work with them. We still have to do the work. There's no shortcut. The Buddha gave us lots of advice on how to deal with habits of mind. He talked about the five hindrances to meditation: sensual desire, ill will, dullness and drowsiness, restlessness and remorse, and doubt. Interesting. And he gave us antidotes for each of these. For sensual desire, i.e. lust, you can contemplate the impurity of the body, the impermanence of the body. People go into charnel grounds and see, look at dead bodies to help them overcome that. This is what the Buddha taught. This is what people, some people in some traditions do. We don't tend to go into charnel grounds a whole lot ourselves, but there are traditions where they do this to practice overcoming lust. For ill will, to cultivate loving kindness and compassion for beings. When you find yourself thinking angry thoughts about someone, to cultivate kindness towards them. A wonderful practice. And we do this. A wonderful practice to help with that ill will, dislike, anger, criticism, all that whole realm of ill will. To cultivate kindness and compassion. To see that the other person is not very different from myself, Maybe they're having a bad day, that's why they just said that thing, it really annoyed me. Maybe I can just let it go by, or just practice kindness. For dullness and drowsiness, especially in meditation, when you feel yourself just kind of, dull, lacking energy, or just kind of fogging out, to contemplate light. I find it helpful to kind of brighten the mind. You don't have to visualize light, but sometimes that helps. Just to brighten up the mind, to put some energy into one's effort. Contemplating light, that's what he said. For restlessness and for remorse, to practice serenity, just stillness. For doubt, he said, you practice defining phenomena. This is what Bhikkhu Bodhi says, and I thought, defining phenomena, I think what he means is looking at things in terms of the Dharma and seeing that the Dharma works to help with doubt about ourselves, doubt about our training, doubt about practice. And we can come up with a whole lot of list of our own antidotes for anger and will and ill will. To practice kindness, yes, and also patience with ourselves, with others, because often our ill will and anger is directed towards ourselves. To practice compassion and also patience with ourselves, patience with other people. If it seems like they keep doing the same thing that really annoys us, patience, kindness, and also patience. Just and patience with ourselves. And we keep doing the thing that annoys us. Just keep working at it, you know. For grasping and worry, feeling like you don't have enough. What am I going to do in my old age, you know? I need to keep everything for myself because I don't know if I'm going to be okay. To counteract that, we can practice generosity, giving, because that helps us to overcome that grasping and fear. It's just a kind of fear. To overcome that, we practice generosity. Not to worry too much about how am I going to be, you know, am I going to have enough, but just to give to somebody really helps to overcome that grasping and fearfulness, greed. Excuse me. For fear and worry, you know, we can practice faith and confidence in the three treasures. Yes, we have these little things to practice, to be mindful to start with. Ah, I'm worrying again. Just be still. And trust that fundamentally it's all right. Things are all right. The Dharma prevails. All beings have Buddha nature. Buddha nature pervades everything. I cannot mess that up. And that is something on which we can rely, something we come back to, something we take refuge in. And with all our moments of fear, worry, anxiety, the middle of the night, cold feet, fear of death, all these things, come back to that. It's all right. Yes, we'll get sick and die. Yes, we may run out of money. Yes, our cat is sick. Yes, whatever it might be, we can trust that fundamentally something takes care of us and sustains us. And that is to rely on remorse for things we've done, mistakes we've made. We can just practice acceptance. Yes, I did that. I have no idea what would have happened if I'd gone that way. It seems like things would have been perfect, you know. You have the ideal of something and things of our projection of something is perfect. There's no suffering. It's all right. Things would have been wonderful. I didn't do it. My life is a misery. Just to say, it's all right. Just accept it. Let it go. Accept things as they are now. Who knows what a mess I might have got into if I'd done that thing. Just to accept and to keep relinquishing that clinging to things we didn't do, mistakes we made, opportunities we missed and all that. Envy of what others have that we seem not to. To practice contentment. That actually we have enough. That actually we don't need to have the thing that somebody else seems to have. We actually have what we need. Because it's like a bottomless hole. Envy is endless. And we find ourselves envying the things that we value. You know, when we're young, the things we envy about other people are different from the things we envy later on in life. When we're young, we might envy other people their beauty, their seeming success with the opposite sex, their smartness at such and such, their skill at football or whatever. And then when we get older, we may envy them other qualities. And when we train, we might envy somebody else their seeming wisdom. You know, why this? Why come they're so wise? How come they're so enlightened? How come they sit so still in meditation? Here I am, I'm just a mess. You know, it's just the same thing. And it's bottomless. But to see that, and to see that we can just let it go, just to practice contentment with what we have and to make the best we can out of that is a wonderful thing. That is the antidote. To trust that actually we're not lacking something. We have what we need. And with all these things, the most important factor in doing this is mindfulness. to see what our little mind is up to see what it's doing. Ah, here comes ill will again. Here comes criticism. Here I am criticizing, looking for someone to criticize. Or I've just found someone to criticize. Looking at what our little mind is doing and saying, it's all right. Relinquish the hook. Abandon the sweet grass. Just come back to stillness. To see what's going on in our mind. To see our particular flavor. And to see when we stray into that grass. Just bring our ox back. To recognize that we've fallen into a habit of mind. Recognize what it is, what particular habit we've fallen into. And then apply the antidote. And in the end, actually, to just let it go. After a while, we don't need to worry too much about the antidote. We can simply recognize anger or recognize despair or whatever it might be and simply relinquish the grip. Ah, it's okay. We don't have to do something with it. We don't have to fix it. We don't have to cure it. All we have to do is relinquish our grip. We can practice positive habits of mind. We can practice kindness. We can practice brightness of heart. We can practice stillness, awareness. We can practice meditation. We can cultivate patience, faith and trust, kindness, fearlessness. All these virtues we can cultivate deliberately, and we can make them our habitual response when something happens. Somebody's upset. We can cultivate kindness towards that person, not just defensiveness or why they're doing this to me, but I'm sorry, you're upset. Can I help? Or something. We can cultivate that response, patience, stillness, all these things. We can train that they're the responses that come up when we might have responded with fear or anger in former times. We can do this. And that is a large part of our practice. The Buddha says, the real cure for all these things is arahantship, enlightenment, realizing truth fully for ourselves, realizing through and through that there is no self to be protected, defended, safeguarded, looked after, made comfortable and secure, because of course it's the self that is at the bottom of it all, as usual, there it is. And when we see finally through this self, once and for all, I'm not there yet, by the way, I don't know anyone in my immediate, anyway. Most of us are not there yet, but we're working on it. But the Buddha says, when we realize through and through the complete severing of all fetters, as he calls it, the relinquishment completely of that self, that is the cure for all these hindrances, all these habits of mind. To know that there is something greater than my little self. And in the meantime, we, who still have this little self arise, can just remember that this little self is not something I have to keep protecting, defending, looking after, making comfortable, and so on. There is something greater, something much more important than that. And that is the thing to which we turn. Not as a little me needing to be protected and kept safe, but just as part of that great matter. When we're old and dying and losing our marbles, they're trickling away down the cracks in the pavement, what will be left? Habits of mind will be a part of that. And if we have cultivated these positive habits of mind, that will stand us in good stead, whether now or in the future. Now as we practice relinquishing the suffering of mind and practicing wholesome habits of mind of kindness, patience, faith, fearlessness, and so on. That helps, that is the way to the ending of suffering. And as our marbles trickle away, part of what is left is those habits of mind. And may we have kindness, fearlessness, deep faith to rely on as we go on in our training and in our lives. That is part of our aspiration. And in the meantime, to constantly turn towards the great matter, that which is greater, which is kindness itself, towards which we turn, on which we rely, that sustains us, whether we're crabby, grumpy, mean, tired, all that stuff, it sustains us anyway, however we are. It doesn't wait till we become good people, it's right here sustaining us. But boy, it's a whole lot easier if we can relinquish the grip on these habits of mind that cause us suffering and turn towards that which is helpful, and turn finally towards that which embraces all those things, which does not judge us, doesn't worry about, oh, this person is crabby, I'm not going to sustain that. You know, we're all sustained. We're all embraced. We're all part of it. And our training is to see that as we best can, and in the meantime, to trust it, to rely upon it, to turn our lives towards it, and to finally realize it for ourselves. That's our talk for the day. Thank you.